You can do it. You can do it. I swear. Start with this, a podcast featuring Night Vale creators Joseph Fink and me, Jeffrey Craner. Each episode, we discuss a topic and then give you two assignments, something to consume and something to create. Start with this, anxiety. My biggest obstacle as a writer is capital A, anxiety. Sure, talent and appeal factor in too, but my anxiety over my lack of those two things is what stops me from improving upon them. This is why I like collaboration and community, having other people there, not necessarily to tell me, hey, great job, or you're really good, although those things are nice, but to keep me on task. Without my friends, my wife, my coworkers, and collaborators, I struggle to find the energy and motivation to get my work done. But I write alone, even if it's in a collaborative effort, and as a full-time writer, I no longer have the cubicle culture, nor even a boss to keep me on task. It is on me. I get things done, just not always easily. I use timers and schedules and word counts, very strict parameters to keep myself focused on the task ahead, so tight that I cannot stop to think, let me go lie back down. Your anxiety is likely very similar and completely different than mine. Ah, such a large, stupid monolith, that anxiety. At least we have each other, and we have this episode to talk about how anxiety comes into our writing and what we can do about it. I'm Jeffrey Craner, here with Joseph Fink. Deep breath. Let's do it. Hi, Joseph.
Hi there. Speaking of timers and schedules, let's start our timer for this episode yeah. So we know how long we go.
Beautiful. I like that a lot. You and I talk a little bit about anxiety. In fact, quite a bit. I think it comes up a lot, especially in the world of Night Vale. We hear that a lot from people of like this podcast has helped me with my anxiety. And I think you've even talked too about like the creating Night Vale was a way of dealing with anxiety.
Yeah, Night Vale was a place I put my anxiety. You know, I've created two different works. I think that both have a relationship to anxiety. Night Vale, I think, is not about anxiety literally, but it's very much what the inside of the brain of a person with anxiety looks like. And then Alice Isn't Dead is very specifically about a person with anxiety. But it is an interesting thing about creating art about anxiety is that the art can then give you anxiety. Yes. You can get anxious about the art.
I had a couple of things of just the general anxiety-based behaviors that come out because of, I'm going to say the word anxiety, and I just want to add quickly that there's a lot of like bigger picture, you know, mental health issues here when we talk about like depression or bipolar disorder or even seasonal affective disorder, things like that, that I think are going to go into the realm of getting some type of therapy or treatment or even medication. Those are not the things we're not talking about. Like when we talk about dealing with anxiety here, those are many components of that, but mostly we're just going to talk about how it manifests in the writing process. So the two things for me that happen a lot, and I'm curious if these are the same for you, in when I feel general anxiety, the way it manifests in my behavior are one, just extreme procrastination, like just a sheer avoidance of what I'm supposed to be doing and the justification for that. And then two is the shortened attention span when I am working of being able to focus on what it is that I'm trying to do. Is that how that manifests for you as well?
Yeah, when I'm feeling overwhelmed, I do often, and it's a fun trick that your brain can play on you in that sometimes that isn't made obvious that these are connected. One thing I've noticed is every time we have a major deadline, especially with like a novel, I get very into a video game. just coincidentally, I suddenly decide that I have this video game I can't stop playing. And it's very much just like my brain is looking for something else to do. My brain is desperately trying to not look at the thing that's making me anxious. So it's like, hey, instead, you have this new game. Let's play that. And so that's definitely the procrastination of just like your brain doesn't want to look at the problem. And so it starts trying to find other stuff you can do. And yeah, definitely the shortened attention span is basically a symptom of the same thing of like when you do start working on it, you like work on a paragraph, then you're like, what's on YouTube? And that's again, I think your brain just doesn't want to look head on at the thing that's making it anxious.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. I definitely get into video games, or I go down some type of either YouTube or Netflix or Hulu rabbit hole. And it's hard to come out of those things. Or I end up, I'll go realize that I have like 6 unused Audible credits, and I'll just go and just burn all of them. And I'll just start listening to a bunch of stuff I don't really need, you know, just stuff that's kind of like not that challenging. More stuff like, oh, here's a book on football that I'm going to listen to. Do you have things that you do to snap yourself out of those moments or to get yourself focused? Is there a thing that you say, oh, I have to put the controller down, or I have to do this, and this is how I'm going to get myself motivated?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my coping techniques come from just being a person with anxiety all of the time about everything. And so I've learned some coping techniques. And one thing is, I learned very early on, is to kind of the whole steer into the skid thing. If you try to completely fight it, that often is counterproductive, because what can happen is you get anxious about the fact that it's not working. That, like, you know, I think a lot of people with panic attacks have experienced this, where you like start to have a panic attack and you try to calm yourself down and you can't. And then that builds the panic of like, oh, I can't calm myself down. And it can become this loop. And I think there's a similar thing here of your brain needs a break, and you can't fight that all the time. So what I try to do is just structure those breaks a little bit. Be like, sure, I really want to play this video game because I'm trying to not think about this novel I have to. But I also have to do this novel. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to work on the novel for the next half an hour, and then I can go play the video game for a little bit, and then I'll come back. And like, I let my brain take those breaks, but in a way that is still getting the work done, that is still structured a little bit. Another thing that I sometimes find useful is to work a little bit on something that doesn't matter. So like, in our last stretch of, the novel I wrote, doing recently, I wrote a song, about the New York City blackout from the point of view of a bodega cat. it was just this silly little song, and it was really enjoyable to take half an hour and create something that absolutely didn't matter. It just gave my brain a little bit of break, where it's not completely tuning out the way it might looking at YouTube or whatever, but it's also not, what I'm doing doesn't really matter to my job right then.
It's a way of feeling it's an achievable task, you know, and sometimes the anxiety just gets more anxiety. You become anxious because you are feeling anxious, and because you realize that the anxiousness has stifled you in some way. And so you're like, nah, I don't know what else to do. And so, yeah, just creating something, just putting something out into the world is absolutely something that can snap you out of it. Even if your original anxiety came from this bigger picture novel deadline, or something to that effect. I was going to talk about it just artistically, the anxiety over being an artist in general, and the anxieties, the way they manifest as a writer, as an artist. I think first and foremost, I actually didn't put it on the outline, but I think the most obvious thing is just panic. Maybe that's a panic attack, but maybe it's the panic in general. For me, where I feel most panicked, you know, where just, it's not a panic attack, but it is certainly like the, I just feel dread. I feel nervousness. I feel a little bit stifled. Meetings do that to me for whatever reason. Phone meetings, in-person meetings. Not that it's about talking to people, but it's just about having a thing in my day. And it's a moment of feeling like, what if everybody suddenly realizes I don't know what I'm doing, or suddenly, you know, realizes I'm not on top of things? That's where panic most often surfaces. It usually doesn't surface for performance or publishing day or post day. None of that. I always feel fine on those days for whatever reason, but it's always the having a meeting, whether it's our Night Vale Presents staff meetings, or whether it's just having a phone call with somebody to, you know, the Chattanooga newspaper wants to do a feature on this. I'm just have to prep myself for it. And it's funny because it's completely illogical. Like it's not a rational panic, but that's one way. I don't know if you have similar moments where panic pops up.
I would say the biggest one for me is like deadlines on big projects. Mm-hmm. Every time we are in final edits of a book, I fall apart. It really is. It is a bad time for me, the last couple weeks before a book is due. Because I think the bigger the project, the more overwhelming it feels. But also, you know that in 2 weeks, we have to be done. In 14 days, we have to be done. And so that disconnect between how big the project is and the time you have left can really start to trigger panic. Going back briefly to coping mechanisms, I remember I used to, it can be really easy when you're an artist to forget to take days off. And so I used to work on writing every single day, or just work on something every single day. I was rarely taking a full day off. And I would occasionally hit these moments where my brain would just shut down and I'd want to be working and I'd end up spending a day wasting time playing a video game or whatever. And I was talking to Meg, my wife, about like, you know, I just couldn't today. I really had something I needed to write, but instead I just spent the whole day playing video game. My brain felt like garbage. And she's like, I think that's your brain telling you it needs time off. And ever since then, I've tried to be strict about taking the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to be really strict about not working on the weekend if I absolutely don't have to. And that has definitely helped a lot because your brain just does need time off. And if you don't give it that, it will assert itself and take that time off. It will make your brain not work when you need it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And if you work a freelance job, if you're sort of self-employed, that's one of the hardest, talking to other people who have that same situation. It's very difficult to remember what day it is and when was the last time you just shut down, got off email and didn't do any, you know, didn't do your job for a day. One of the other things that I think is, I remember when I first started listening to podcasts, was listening to WTF with Marc Maron. And the thing that connected with me about WTF so much was the way he dealt with resentment. That it was the first time I had heard somebody, especially somebody that successful. Because in my mind, I know when WTF started out, Marc Maron wasn't successful by the terms that he would be today. But he really, really was battling with some general resentment in the comedy world. And it just really spoke to me, the way he was dealing with it, the way he confronted people about it, talked about it, the way he sort of looked inwardly about it. And I thought it really put some words to, I think, what I was experiencing living in New York City trying to be a playwright. And I remember I would have these regular lunches with my friend Callie when she lived in New York City, and I would always complain about just how outside of the playwriting community I felt, even though I was doing all this work with the Neo-Futurists, and just how difficult it was for people to even treat that with some level of respect. And I remember one of the targets of people that I really just disliked was Mac Rogers.
Hi, Mac, if you're listening.
Hi, Mac. And I'd never met Mac. But I followed Mac on Twitter, and this is the classic case of, like, also just knew a whole bunch of people who knew Mac. And his plays are really good. And he's a really good writer. And he's very well.
He has since written some very good fiction podcasts.
Some amazing
Steal the
fiction.
Stars we recommended
yes,
on the show.
Absolutely. He's so good. And we've met him, and he's super nice and amazing. But I remember at the time just feeling like, for whatever reason, Mac Rogers was this focus of, that, like, somebody who seemed like roughly my same age, who'd been in New York as long as I have, as long as I had, and was just, it just seemed not right that I just didn't have the same audience that he had. You know what I mean? And again, it's completely irrational, but I think listening to Marc Maron and then talking to more people in the artistic community about kind of that Marc Maron style, it was really interesting to hear a little bit more of people having that same level of dealing with what it means to have this irrational resentment.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about working in the arts is there's always going to be someone more successful than you. Always. It does not matter what peak you reach. There's going to be somebody who is like, I wish I was doing that. That will always exist for you. I guarantee you that the novelists or the filmmakers or the whoevers that you think have the careers that you want, that you resent for those careers a little bit, that they have people who are like, oh man, I wish I was able to do this. That's not something you get to get rid of, and it's not good. It's just something you have to kind of be aware of as a thing that will exist, is recognize that those people that you are a little bit professionally jealous of are professionally jealous of other people, that everyone has the person they're looking at and being like, why am I not that person?
Yeah.
And maybe just being aware of that can help you try to get out of that cycle.
I think it was a conversation I had with Kevin Hart Free that kind of put that into perspective.
The actor on Night Vale,
the
and
actor
our friend,
on Night
Kevin
Vale,
Hart Free.
And Kevin Hart Free, who plays Kevin, and who also I was in the Neo-Futurist with, and is also a playwright and producer, a theater producer in New York City. But he had a similar statement to you, like, we're all dealing with it. And also Kevin, who is Black and gay, you know, he has a lot of other reasons that he's felt excluded from communities before, too. And so it does put that into perspective as to, like, we're all experiencing it on some level, and some people have it harder than others. And all you can know is just that the people that you do surround yourself with, it's just important to have the good relationship you have with them and to like what it is you do. And you do good things, and it will pay off for you. And it may not pay off in the way that you think it will pay off, but it does pay off. Another form of anxiety, the way anxiety manifests, I think this is probably the most common thing we talk about, which is just the worry or concern that your writing or your efforts aren't good enough. You know, I think it leads to people abandoning projects altogether, and in some cases just abandoning their art form altogether because of that worry seeps in. You know, when you talk about a project, like, how do you know when you are being irrational about this project isn't working, I should give it up? Because we've talked before about it's okay to let work go. But how do we know sometimes that it's okay to let it go because the work on it is done and or it needs a break? And how do we know we're letting it go because we just are feeling over anxious?
To me, this is a really interesting question because it does go into so many of the stuff we've talked about in previous episodes. So we've talked about the idea of developing practice of the idea to execution episode. We talked about taking several tries at an idea because you need to get better. And part of that is developing your sense of what is good. You know, gradually understanding what you're capable of, what's working. That's all stuff that just happens by trying over and over. The artist disposable thing can be really helpful with that because I think one thing that can trip people up and really get them in that cycle of, oh, my work's not good enough, is this feeling that the work needs to stand forever, or the work needs to be your best work ever, or the work needs to stand up 100 years from now. Someone will look at this work and recognize it as genius art. And once you realize it doesn't have to, once you realize that in order for this art to be successful, it just needs to function as art for even a minute. It just needs to work for someone once, and it was successful as art. It lays off that pressure that, okay, maybe this one isn't as good as other ones you've done. Maybe that's true, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because you're already moving on and you're already starting a new thing. So the less stock you put in each thing needs to stand forever as this monument to my genius, the easier it is to be like, I think this is good enough. I've done this enough times that this feels good to me. And I'm going to trust that instinct. And if it turns out that it's not as good as other things, art is disposable. So that's okay. I can move on.
Yeah. I would really like to start a podcast called A Monument to My Genius. It'd be great. This is how I break out of my anxiety. Just fully deny it 100%. Just talk about how great I am. I think another thing that happens in that process of there's sort of a paralysis by analysis of like not knowing what's right anymore.
And I'm sorry. We also need a podcast called A Paralysis by Analysis.
Yep. And
new band. It might be a good band name.
We'll just talk in circular logic over and over until we just reach no conclusion whatsoever. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think social media has kind of done that to my brain. I was very active on Twitter for several years, and then the last couple of years, I'm just not as much anymore. And I think a lot of it was just the way it just overstimulated my mind of just there's so many opinions. And I don't mean to be the old man who's like, oh, all these people with opinions or whatever, but it's overwhelming because you start losing track of what's right or wrong because everything is happening all the time right now, and it's hard to sort of like parse out what's necessary and what's needed. So it takes some time kind of with your own head to work through what is the good moral choice for my life all the way down to like, what should my character be doing right now? And then sorting through all of those other things later. I don't know if hitting that kind of being stifled by too much information is a thing that happens for you or not.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, again, I think we all have experienced the way that social media can overstimulate and it's less all the people talking, and it's more just it makes you very aware constantly of what's happening in the world. And that overstimulation of news, obviously, is, I think, a thing that that we all have experienced in the last few years. But that's where, you know, you can develop some practices to help with that, finding, you know, I generally try to start each morning by reading for a little bit, because reading is such a solitary, specific act. It forces you to pay attention to nothing but the text in front of you. If you really keep to it, it kind of forces your brain to focus. And so it's a good way to start that. And again, like finding that practice that you know, woodworking as you've done, or like writing a song, something like that, that demands your attention, that takes your brain's full attention, but also isn't the thing that is giving you stress. And so it's, you know, my wife and I recently took, you took it with us. We all took a clay.
Pottery.
Great. I almost said claymation, and that's not the word.
Clay choking.
Yeah, we all took pottery, and like Megan and I were talking about it, it's so wonderful to have an art form that we can be bad at, it doesn't matter that we're terrible at it. It's really enjoyable to have a thing that is just like, I know I'm bad at this, but I enjoy doing it, and it's fun to do that.
Yeah. And also, it's a, like reading, it's a thing that just requires your full attention.
Yeah.
It requires both hands, and you really couldn't even be listening to a podcast while you're doing pottery either. It's just that you really do need to like kind of focus on what it is that you're doing. And
it really, to talk briefly about what's so great about pottery itself, just encourage everyone to do pottery, is that in a way that writing or a lot of other art forms doesn't, it really puts you in your body.
It does.
I'm not used to that. Like I mostly, you know, I've write and then I've played instruments, and obviously instruments use your body, but there's just something about pottery where you have to pay really close attention to what your hands are feeling and what your back is doing. And I'm just, guys, it's really enjoyable to have a thing where you just have to put yourself very much in your physical space and pay attention to that.
That's why the pottery fell apart in Ghost, because she started fucking instead of doing the pottery. You can't do both.
Until you're very good at both.
That was my pottery note to Demi Moore. Before we shut down, I do think, you started mentioning about pottery and about reading, ways in which we take care of ourselves. And I think some of these will be really familiar to people, but it'll be good to talk through them. Mentioning reading is really big, because it was sometime last year, I don't know, I was just in a really bad place. And some of it was just external factors. Some of it was general anxiety. Some of it was external factors, like dealing with family issues and things like that. But I was several months where I was writing my Nightville and Within the Wires episodes. I was on top of whatever we were doing barely, but I just was feeling miserable almost every day for several months. And I realized like in that several months, like I hadn't read a book in almost, like I really hadn't read a book other than like maybe a nonfiction Audible or something in almost a year. Like I went like almost a full year without reading, and I just wasn't. And I picked up, Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon. And it just really it just reinvigorated me. And I realized like, oh, this is kind of the equivalent of just suddenly having a salad when you've just had burgers every day. And you realize like, oh, your body feels better suddenly. And that was how it was, of like remembering to read, remembering to find those solitary moments, and to be taking in good storytelling is really what's happening at the heart of that.
You can kind of modulate that to the level of stress you're feeling. So often what I do is, you know, you want to challenge yourself, you want to read, you know, things that make you think differently. And so if I'm in a good place, I'll often try books that seem like they're going to maybe be a little bit of a struggle, either because it's just a very different point of view than I'm used to, or the language is very complex. But then if I'm in the middle of a book deadline and I'm in a real bad place, you can kind of let yourself just be like, I remember reading this book and having a really good time. I'm going to reread it. I'm just going to allow myself to have a really good time with a book, and I'm not going to worry so much about whether it is teaching me new things or changing my brain. So you can kind of modulate, like challenge yourself with your hobbies or with your books or with whatever when you can. I think don't back off from that. Like it's easy to get into this thing where you're only ever doing the easy thing. Don't do that, but also give yourself permission when things seem overwhelming to be like, I'm going to read this book I read 5 years ago and I remember really loving, and I'm just going to let myself enjoy this one.
Yeah, revisiting those things, and especially stuff that brings you inspiration. I was telling you before we start recording about mowing my lawn and finding all these old musicals that I used to listen to in high school and college on Spotify, and realizing like just rediscovering Sondheim. And it was really great. And it was really wonderful. And it feels inspirational. It makes me want to write more. A couple other things. Obviously, like we talk about healthy eating is a big thing. I do think I'm a big believer that The inner workings of your body are directly connected to the status of your mind. You know, just how collected you are, what your mood is, how you're feeling, and I think finding the right diet, eating at the right things, treating yourself well from time to time is pretty good. It can help a lot.
Yeah, I think this has nothing to do with like you're eating bad things or you need to lose weight. Like it has nothing to do with any of that. It's just a recognition that you exist in your body. And so things like the things you eat and how much water you're drinking and what you're doing during the day will affect what your brain does. And recognizing that in yourself and kind of learning how your body works is really useful. One thing that I've learned, I used to do it as a teenager and I stopped for a long time. And I've recently taken up running again. For me, it has nothing to do with it's not that I want to lose a bunch of weight. It's not like I'm training for a marathon. It's just I've learned that days where I run, I feel so much better, that my brain seems to work better for me. And so this is just a thing I've learned is true about myself, that if I just have my body to do that, it makes my brain work better. And so finding those things for yourself, recognizing that your brain and your body are not separate, and learning how it works and what works for you.
And if you can get outside, that's also a very positive thing. I realize just how much better I feel working outside, mowing my lawn or taking up woodworking and just like making things and just, you know, working out in the driveway and cutting wood and just being out in the sun all day. As my doctor told me a few years ago, he said, your blood work looks great, but I think you need to get more D. And so I'm getting my vitamin D. So I got that part of it. I'm assuming that's what he meant. But if he meant the other thing, I'm not getting enough of that. I'm very sorry.
And that's our main advice to all of you.
Yeah, you're not getting enough D. Get more D. really catch that D. So last couple of things, we can move quickly through these. But we were talking about like healthy eating and exercise, being outside, being in your body. Obviously, if you can afford therapy, if you're in a place where you can do that, I really do recommend therapy for those who can afford that. I think also socializing, just finding time, making time to be with other people, be in and around places with other people regularly, and ultimately expanding that out to finding a community of other writers or artists in your field and regularly touching base with them. There may be people in those groups you don't love, and they're not like your soulmate, they're not your best friend, they're not even always easy to be around, but that type of stuff can fuel you. It's finding people that are also talking about the same thing that you like to talk about. And that's really, really important. And then finally, I would say, and this will relate to our assignment, but just finding achievable and or repeatable tasks. You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, even during our massive book deadline, finding time to write a song about the New York City blackout and just saying like, this is a 3.5-minute song and I'm going to write this. And just finding a task that is smaller, more achievable than a 400-page novel that you're having to reread for the 8th time, top to bottom, and whatever. So I think those are it. Is there anything else that you would add to that?
No, that all seems good. I think the main thing is just taking that seriously and finding the time. Because, you know, things like socializing, I think a lot of us have had the experience of just like, my week is filled up with stuff if I'm not trying to do this art thing. I'm trying to do the thing that makes me a living, or, you know, I'm having to take care of this. And so it really does take some effort on your part to be like, I'm just going to set aside the time. I'm going to make sure Sunday afternoon that I ask a couple of my friends to hang out. Like, I'm going to take that seriously and make sure that happens in my week. Because if I just wait for it to happen, it won't.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break and we will come back and we will give you some assignments.
Hello, Joseph here. I have two books coming out this year. Seriously. May 11th, 2021. The first 10 years. Two sides of the same love story. So there is a love story that happened behind the scenes of Welcome to Night Vale between me and Meg Bashwinner, MC and tour manager for the live Night Vale show. In this memoir, we recount the first 10 years of our relationship, year by year, without consulting each other beforehand. It's a funny and romantic story about how differently we experience and remember our lives. Then on July 20th, 2021, The Halloween Moon, my first ever novel for ages 10 and up. Esther Gold loves Halloween, until the year that Halloween night just won't end. Even she doesn't want Halloween to last forever. No matter your age, if you are a fan of what I do, I think you're going to love this book. Get these books wherever you get your books.
And we are back. Hi. So we're going to give you some assignments. I'm going to start with something to consume. This is a short-run podcast that I listened to a few weeks ago. It's produced by Ross Sutherland, who does one of our favorite podcasts, Imaginary Advice. But there's a podcast called Mark Can't Rap, and it is done by a British poet named Mark Grist. And Mark Grist has done a lot of performance poetry. In fact, has, if you do a YouTube search for him, you will find that he's done rap battles, including one with one of his teenage students. Mark is also an English teacher, and he's really great at the rap battle stuff, or the poetry battle stuff. But he made this podcast under the idea of what he realized was when he tried putting beats under his poetry, and he realized, like, this is not the same thing, and I cannot rap, and I'm really bad at it. Like, this sounds really bad, and I don't understand why, or I don't understand quite how to do this, and I'm realizing I need to talk to people. So he talks to professional rappers and tries to get himself into a place where he can do this really complex art form that you would think there are a lot of similar tools to poetry, but there's so much else to it. The reason I was recommending this is that he is on the surface very much dealing with his anxieties about this, which is he understands that he is a cultural outsider to these professional rappers, not only in terms of this isn't his job, but also there is a socioeconomic and racial component to rap music that this, you know, kind of 40-ish white guy is approaching. And so it's listening to him try to navigate that, but also his lack of talent in this field and trying to develop that talent. And it culminates in, I believe it's 6 episodes, it culminates in him putting out a mixtape of the raps that he made and the 4 that he made in the course of this podcast. So I would say give that a listen. It's really interesting to listen to an artist kind of go through their anxieties as an artist on the surface.
And your create assignment this week, this is going to be based on the idea of finding short, achievable tasks that are still developing your artistic skills. So what we want you to do is set a calendar reminder for yourself every day for 5 straight days. What that reminder will be is to spend 10 minutes writing nonstop, no editing, no pausing, don't rethink your choices, don't stop to find the perfect phrase, just keep pushing forward, keep that momentum. Your topic for each of those 5 days is a different body part. Could be an eyeball, a nose, a little toe, whatever. You can talk autobiographically about your own version of the nose or the little toe and what it feels like in his history, or you can write a fictional story or just some weird poetry. The point is just to write for 10 minutes until that buzzer goes off. When you're done, go into whatever text editor you use, find a nice font, put it into 5 sections, put the title of each of those sections in bold. Mm-hmm. Really make it look nice and look at this experimental novel you've written. I don't know if it'll be good. Probably it won't be, but also good isn't an objective measure. It might be useful to someone. The point is it's a thing. It is an actual piece of work that you've made. And all that we need from you in order to do it is to just take those 10 minutes seriously. We need you to, when that reminder happens, stop what you're doing, set a timer for 10 minutes and actually write for those 10 minutes. And if you do that for 5 days, you too will have this experimental novel about body parts. If you want to share some of it with the membership community, please do. You don't have to, because obviously this is less about creating something that stands up to feedback and more about just putting that habit in your body. But I think you might find that you come up with stuff that is far more interesting than you'd expect.
You're welcome to title it Monument to My Genius as well.
Or, God, what was the
Paralysis by Analysis.
And, you know. Either of those is fine.
That is all for this episode, but your assignment is just beginning. Head on over to startwiththispodcast.com to join our membership community. Becoming a member allows you to share your assignments with other listeners, talk about what's sparking your creativity, and hopefully find future collaborators. Plus, You'll be able to ask follow-up questions about this and future episodes and gain exclusive access to episodes where we answer those questions. Membership is just $5. That's only five $1 tacos at a $1 taco place. We can't wait to see what you are working on. Start With This is a production of Night Vale Presents. It is produced by Julia Melfi, editing by Grant Stewart, mixing by Vincent Cascione, theme song by Joseph Fink. And hey, if you'd like your own cover of the theme song featured on the show, email us at startwiththis@nightvalepresents.com or post it on our members' message board. All other music is by Caged Animals. Find more at cagedanimals.net. Very special thank you to Adam Cecil and Christy Gressman. Check out nightvalepresents.com for more information about this show and all of our other shows. Thank you for listening. Thank you guys so much for listening to Start With This. Please go check out our membership forum, and let's leave you with a little bit of an old adage to leave you on.
That's one of my favorites.
God damn it. My grandmother used to say that to me all the time. I was like, ah, yeah. Thank you, Grandma.
Thank you, Grandma. And
oh my God, my brain is so fried. I just had it in my head, and then I started talking, and then I merged that with what I was saying, and then I felt myself stop talking because I couldn't remember what I was saying.
To be fair, this is a fitting ending for the anxiety episode.
All right, goodbye.
Hello, iPod broadcast listeners. My name is Meg, and I am one of the esteemed tri-hosts of the beloved iBroad Good Morning Night Vale. I, along with my hilarious friends, fellow Night Vale actors, passionate eaters, and soft-hitting journalists, Symphony Sanders and Hal Lublin, are now over 100 episodes into our deep dive recap show of Welcome to Night Vale. We've tackled topics like soft meat crown headcanons, Cecil's fashion, and whether Steve Scones were really all that terrible, plus behind-the-scenes stories from the Night Vale creative family. And we've heard from listeners like you about queer representation, Night Vale named pets, major theories, minor questions, and of course, best and worst practices for alternative spa therapy services. If you know, you know. Check out Good Morning Night Vale every other Thursday, wherever you get your iBroads, iCasts, PodBroads, and podcasts. I think I like PodBroads the best. I'm a real PodBroad myself. From PRX.